We'll start the testimony. We do not have a quorum yet, so we'll have to wait for any votes until we have a quorum. It's getting close. Representative Fritz, you want to start on House File 4014, which we've heard before as another bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and I want to invite and welcome my neighbor, Representative Ruth, here from Steele County as well. You know, I represent parts of Rice and Steele County, and geographically speaking, I actually have most of the land that I represent in Steele County, but I do go around Owatonna, and Representative Ruth is a co-author of House File 4014, so thank you for coming.
Well, why don't you move the bill then? Oh, we can't do that. Okay.
Oh, can't we?
Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I want to thank you for this opportunity again to bring House File 4014 before you. We have been before this committee before, and I do have an amendment. Can we? No, nope, can't do the amendment. Okay. Mr. Chair, would that be okay if we discuss it now and then move it later when we get a quorum? Okay. All right, and to the amendment, included in the amendment, this amendment has been heard before all necessary committees prior to the committee deadlines. And I'm going to ask the Commissioner Tom Shea to come down to go through the amendment.
Senator, would you state your name for the tape, and welcome back to the House of Representatives.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee, Tom Shea, Steele County Commissioner, and thank you for the opportunity to again hear the bill. I mentioned before, Steele County is one of seven counties in the state that continues to own and operate a nursing home. And we're real proud of the fact that we're profitable, meaning we don't subsidize it directly with property tax dollars. But we also understand that given the current funding for nursing homes, that we don't have a sustainable facility in operation. And so what we've done is we've tried to be proactive and try to avoid a crisis that will ultimately come in the operation of our nursing home. And we have looked ahead and trying to develop a model for providing long-term care services for everybody in our county, and do that within the context of our Communities for a Lifetime initiative. And that is one where we encompass all the providers within our county from the very first time that somebody might happen to go to a senior lunch service or play cards or what have you, all the way to our hospice services that we have, and try to coordinate and connect all of those services, which includes assisted living, congregate living, adult daycare, and those various services, and try to incorporate those or coordinate all of those. And a key piece of that is the long-term care, which is our nursing home. And so what we're proposing to do is to create a new community nonprofit to own and operate the nursing home as well as our congregate and assisted living, to downsize the nursing home facility from 108 beds to 80 beds, and to build this new facility physically connected to a brand new hospital, which is operated by the Allina system, and also connected to the clinic services, which is operated by the Mayo Health System, and do that on our healthcare campus. And that's the essence of the legislation. There's two parts: one, to enable Steele County to engage in or to participate in this community nonprofit, and the second is to have authorization to downsize and have a new rate for the new facility. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Say, how would your plan or your proposal differ from the other six counties that have ownership of a nursing care facility?
Representative Erickson, we would actually be transferring the assets of the facility to this new community nonprofit. So there would only be six after this takes place. And the reason that we want to do that is we understand that it's not a core competency of county government to operate nursing homes, and we are partnering with the Benedictine Health System to actually manage the nursing home facility and also be a full partner with us in the Communities for a Lifetime initiative.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner Shea, to what extent would the county have involvement?
We, Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, we would be a 40% owner of the new nonprofit. That Steele County would.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, the risk of having more hearings is people I start reading the bill, you know. just had a couple questions. The department's fine with all this and the blended the rates and all that, and I just have one other question. Why do you have a language that tells you how you can do something? Can't you just set up your own deal and on the sale terms retain 40% interest and all that, or is this you need the help? Is that? I don't mind. I'm just curious.
Representative Abel, there's a provision in statute that talks about counties participating in equity in nonprofit corporations. Our legal counsel believes that it doesn't apply to our initiative, but given the fact that we will be floating revenue bonds and those types of things, we want it to be crystal clear that we have permission from the state to do so.
All right, that's fine. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Fritz, why don't you move your bill?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman,
first
I'd like
all, I have to call the meeting to order.
Do that first. All right, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 4014 to Finance.
We recommend the pass and sent to the overall Finance Committee. And then do you want to do your amendment?
Yes. And Mr. Chairman, I have my amendment H414DE1, members. I'd like to move that.
So, Representative Fritz moves the DE1 amendment. Any discussion of that? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So, we now have the DE1 amendment, which is a delete all. And is there any further discussion?
Moving on.
So, seeing none, all those in favor of the 4014 as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Thank you. And next we have Representative Rukavina with House File 3873.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will move that House File 3873 be recommended and passed and sent to the Finance Committee. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is there are no financial implications of this, and in keeping with your method of presenting a bill, Mr. Chair, this is a really good bill that protects vulnerable adults and children. That's all I have to say on it.
This, we've actually heard this before, I think,
yes.
And what it does is simply keep private the names of people that are on the roll. So, any discussion of this?
Okay.
Representative Abler.
Well, I mean, it's here he is. We have to haze the guy at our committee, you know. It's going to be declaring a health bill, for heaven's sake. Can you tell us how on earth you ever got involved in carrying this bill?
My daughter is a business agent for Colton State Fine. He wants the truth.
I'm prepared to vote, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brucavini, has there been a problem? Is that why this legislation is necessary?
Mr. Chair, I'd let one of my testifiers answer that.
Good morning. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Minnesota Disability Law Center, and Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson. This is a new program, and so this hasn't happened yet, but we learned that this was going to be the process. So in conversation with the department and others, we decided that it would be better to have the department mail things out for health plans. The health plans would cover the cost, but the department already has people's private information, and they would be the ones in control of it. So they wouldn't be giving people's names to health plans. So it has this for this particular program, this has not happened yet, but we'd like it not to happen.
Well, seeing no further questions, I'll renew my motion that House File 3873 be recommended to pass and sent to the overall Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So House File 3873 is approved and sent to the Finance Committee. And next we have House File 3539, Representative Swales. And I will move that House File 3539 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Thank
Representative
you.
Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if this is the amendment.
We have an amendment, DA1.
A1.
And Representative Bunn is actually going to move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm moving the A1 amendment. This amendment is intended to put the bill in the form that we want to discuss it today. The bill, the proposal is no longer for the 144-bed hospital, including adults. This amendment reduces it to a 66-bed facility that is exclusively for children and adolescents. And I'm sure that Representative Sells will discuss the many implications of this change. Among them, though, is that it will no longer have a fiscal impact on the state as it did when adults were included.
Okay, any discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. So, Representative Swales, we now have the bill the way you want it, I assume.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Huntley and members. I'm very happy to be here today to present House File 3539, a bill which will address a major shortfall in our healthcare system, a lack of timely access to inpatient mental health services for our children that live in the Twin Cities. This bill has been heard and approved in Chair Walker's Mental Health Division as well as Chair Thiessen's Health and Human Services Committee. The bill is receiving support because the members of these committees understand that mental illness is the most common illness that afflicts Minnesotans. They also understand that needed inpatient services are not being provided to patients, no matter how severe their illness, and that the status quo needs to change. Members, you know what I'm talking about. You've received emails and letters and phone calls from constituents. You've talked with co-workers and neighbors and friends about how the current system is failing our children. Care delayed, care denied, children as young as 10 or 12 sitting in emergency rooms for days before being transferred hundreds of miles away from their families and familiar surroundings where they may be admitted into units that mix adults and teens as young as 15. That, members, is the wrong care delivered in the wrong place at the wrong time. We can do better, and that's why I'm here today. What has been the response of the inpatient mental health providers to the growing need for child and adolescent psych beds? Some have cut the number of beds available to patients. They've invested instead in cancer centers, cardiac centers, and other high-profit operations. We hear about a medical arms race in healthcare. Members, in the mental health area, we're experiencing unilateral disarmament. Let me give you a couple of examples. Several years ago, it was here in St. Paul when Health East closed its child psych unit at St. Joseph's Hospital. Several weeks ago, it was at Fairview Riverside, which has announced that it is merging its 14-bed child psych unit with its 14-bed adolescent unit to create not a 28-bed joint unit, but a 14-bed unit. 14 beds are being eliminated at the same time that demand is increasing. The result is that we have fewer child and adolescent psych beds today than we did 10 years ago, when the Twin Cities had 500,000 fewer residents and demand was lower than it is today. Members, if we had a glut of child and adolescent psych beds, I wouldn't be here today with this bill. But we don't have a glut like we do in cardiac services, where metro hospitals have increased capacity to about 160% of the national average. In child and adolescent psych, we're below the national average in beds per 1,000 residents. And, in fact, we have only about 60% of the national average of psych beds. Members, I know that some of you are concerned that this project authorizes for-profit hospitals. We have a tradition in Minnesota of having nonprofit hospitals. We do have a for-profit specialty hospital currently in Golden Valley, which provides services to patients that are on ventilators and need special care. So it's not unprecedented or illegal for us to authorize a for-profit psych hospital for children. I'm not wild about for-profit hospitals either, but here's the choice I face when looking at this proposal. Is it better to have a child that has attempted suicide or is hearing voices telling him to kill himself, or to get care in a timely manner from a state-of-the-art for-profit psych hospital close to home, or is it better for him to sit in an ER for days receiving no care, only to be transported to Thief River Falls or Duluth for care because the nonprofit hospitals in the Twin Cities have no beds available? Members, that is not a hard question for me. If it's one of my kids or one of my students, I want them to get care now, not later this week. I want them to get care here, not hundreds of miles away. I received greater comfort on this issue after talking with the leadership of Prairie St. John's. They applied for and received membership in the Catholic Health Association. Let me briefly read you several guidelines from the Catholic Health Association that direct how Prairie St. John's must provide care to maintain their membership. Catholic health facilities provide compassionate, high-quality care to patients and residents and their families and loved ones, addressing the needs of their bodies, minds, and spirits. Catholic health facilities and systems reach outside their walls into the communities they serve to foster health and well-being. As Catholic Health Ministry, we share a special commitment to the poor and vulnerable. We are driven to advocate to protect the fundamental rights of all individuals and to change the social conditions that perpetuate poverty, injustice, and discrimination. Our mission, in accordance with Catholic social teachings and values, calls us to serve as advocates for all, particularly the underserved and other vulnerable populations. We believe that health care is a basic human right. Members, these guidelines are not something that Prairie St. John's talks about, but doesn't do. I think you've seen their charity care charts that show that Prairie St. John's provides more charity care than any metro hospital, with the exception of HCMC. Let me repeat that. Prairie St. John's provides more charity care than any metro hospital, with the exception of HCMC. More than Fairview, more than Health East, more than Regents. They take very seriously the Catholic Church's directive to provide care to all, regardless of insurance status or ability to pay. One other point I'd like to make before I close is to answer the question of why this bill is here in the Finance Division. As introduced, the bill provided for 144 child, adolescent, and adult psych and CD beds. Without going into all the details, that meant qualifying as an Institute for Mental Disease, or IMD. The state provides payments for services provided in IMDs, but without a federal match. So the bill that was approved by Chair Thiessen's committee had a fiscal note. For the adoption of the A1 amendment, reducing the size of the project and limiting it to children and adolescents, we understand from the Department of Human Services that there is no longer a fiscal note. In conclusion, members, I would appreciate your support for this bill You've received the Bedwatch emails that have documented week after week after week that no child or adolescent like them are available in the Twin Cities. Now that Fairview has cut back its child and adolescent beds, that situation is even worse. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your interest in children's mental health issues and your work to enhance services to patients that need care.
We have one person that wants to testify, and if they'd like to come down. Mm-hmm. And would you state your name for the tape, please?
Good morning. My name is Linda Schrepfer. I am representing Fairview Health Systems and Services, where we have 22 child and adolescent mental health beds and 27 adolescent mental health chemical dependency and straight chemical dependency beds. You have before you a letter from Kathy Knight, the Vice President of Behavioral Services, which I introduced for your consideration. In it, it details that Fairview continues to support the study that the Minnesota Department of Health provided and believes that what we need to do is invest in the system in the prevention and the mid-level services in order to resolve some of the problems that we're currently having in the health care delivery system of mental health and chemical dependency to child and adolescent patients. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you, Representative Swales told us about the 14 beds being eliminated. Could you explain that to us, why that was done?
Currently, we have 6 adult mental health units that are in the North Building. That area needed significant remodeling and renovation to upgrade the aesthetics, the safety of that area. Those units are at pretty much 90% capacity. Conversely, the children's unit, which was the 14-bed unit, was within the last year plus barely at 50% capacity. It closed over the Christmas holidays due to lack of providers able to admit children to that unit, and we felt that we could not limit the access of adult mental health beds in the system. So for the next 18 months during the course of the construction, that unit will be utilized as an adult unit. And after that point in time, it is our hope that we will find providers to reopen that unit.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm a little confused because I'm hearing some really conflicting things here, and I'm not sure really who to ask. You know, on the one hand, you're saying that your child unit was at 50% capacity and there weren't enough providers, and then we're talking here about, you know, adding a lot more beds, obviously hiring providers from someplace, and not having any beds available. So, I mean, can somebody kind of try to clear up the disconnect here for me?
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you. I can tell you that Prairie St. John's currently, with the staffing that they have at their clinic in Woodbury that is operating, feel that with the 66-bed hospital that they have the psychiatric staff to meet those needs without having to go outside to recruit additional staff. The bed watch information that you've been receiving every day for over a month indicated that there were no child, adolescent or child beds available in the Twin Cities day after day after day. And so it is unfortunate that, you know, Fairview is feeling that they were only at 50% capacity. But I think that we've been able to show you the facts of what the availability has been in the Twin Cities for over a month.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, can the representative from Fairview answer that as well? Because, I mean, are there beds available or are there not beds available? I mean, do we have enough capacity or don't we?
The issue really is not bed capacity. The issue is provider capacity and ability. We have a national shortage of child and adolescent psychiatrists. We have been recruiting at Fairview for the last 18 to 24 months to find more providers. and we have added some to our outpatient area, but we have not yet as been able to add to our inpatient area. The University of Minnesota Department of Psychiatry is also mounting a recruitment effort, but they have not as yet been able to recruit anybody in.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, we don't have, Mr. Chair, the letter that you referred to.
You don't?
No. So I would appreciate receiving that. But to you, the Fairview rep, and I'm sorry I missed your name.
Linda Schreffer.
Ms. Schreffer. Talk a little bit about the study that you said you, as a representative of Fairview, agreed that the Department of Health should continue. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Ms. Schreffer.
What we're supporting is the study that the Minnesota Department of Health did, stating that they did not believe that the Prairie St. John proposal would serve the public interest.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Schreffer, can you give us why the department is thinking the way they are? I mean, delving into what the department's thoughts are from your perspective as a Fairview representative?
Sure.
I think that when you talk about mental health care delivery systems, you have to talk about, are there adequate services in the prevention mode? Are there adequate services in the mid-level mode? Are the services that are available cost-effective? Where is the burden for that cost in terms of private pay versus public pay? And we believe firmly that we're going to provide service to whoever comes to our door. But in the child adolescent world, particularly in children, a lot of those people who come have public assistance. And they are there for a very long time. We have had problems with trying to discharge children to appropriate levels of care, keeping them in the hospital for 4, 6, 8 weeks past the date when they could have been discharged, simply because we could not find adequate facilities to discharge them to. We did a study probably 2-3 months ago and looked at the number of avoidable days that kids really did not need to be in the hospital, but were still there because they couldn't find services. There were 42 avoidable days per month, kids sitting in the hospital at a more restrictive level of care than they needed to be served at, because we did not have services available to them at a less restrictive level of care.
May I respond to that?
Representative
Erickson and members, I just was shown this, and I think it's interesting to note that right now, at this very moment in time, there are 0 beds available in St. Paul. There are 0 beds available for children and adolescents at the University of Minnesota Medical Center at Fairview. There is 1 bed available at Abbott Northwestern. That's all that's available in the Twin Cities at this moment for children and adolescents. I just thought I would make that point.
Representative Erickson, do you have a follow-up question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swales, in reading the delete for page 5, is the project in Woodbury then contingent on that, I suppose, request or application, fulfilling the Federal Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act and Centers for Medicaid and Medicare? Is there something that's pending before this project could go forth if we...
I believe there is nothing pending at this point. What we're simply asking is for a waiver on the moratorium to build a hospital facility.
So then, Mr. Chair, and to the representative from Fairview, does Fairview operate under the same system then, the Federal Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act and Centers for Medicaid and Medicare certification? Do you have that certification at Fairview?
Ms. Schreffer.
tell you the truth, I don't know if absolutely sure, but we are licensed by the Minnesota Department of Health and meet all federal and state guidelines for providing services.
So, Mr. Chair, one last question, Representative Swales. Why is this necessary then for the Prairie St. John's Cancer Facility?
Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, for me, personally, I look at Washington County. We do not have one psychiatric bed in the entire county. This is going to meet a tremendous need for families who have had to see their children sent to Duluth or East River Falls, Rochester, far away from home when these children are needing their parents close by for that kind of support.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I was going to ask a different question, but since we've kind of got us onto the, you know, the added capacity, I mean, I think we're all wrestling with the issue of is there a need or isn't there a need? And to Ms. Serper's point about part of the problem is that people can't get out of the hospital because there isn't enough post-discharge and there may not be enough prevention care, I thought I'd remind you that we adopted overwhelmingly on the floor an amendment I offered a week ago. Maybe it wasn't even that long ago. I lose track of the days here sometimes. But the Mental Health Needs Work Group, which actually was inspired by our first hearing on Prairie St. John's, in which the Metro East group had in their letters how they thought a major problem was the lack of pre-services to prevent the need for hospitalization, crisis services, et cetera, and they had a long list, and post-discharge recovery facilities, and that was part of the problem. Ms. Semper referenced the 42 days just within her facility. And what we authorized is a work group that's going to establish the current capacity and utilization of inpatient hospital psychiatric beds, partial hospitalization programs, children and adults residential treatment facilities, mobile crisis services and adult crisis homes, intensive outpatient services and supportive housing arrangements. It'll look at the workforce of practicing psychiatrists, mental health professionals. It'll report back next January. It's to look at all ages, so it's not just children and adolescents, it's children, adolescents, and adults. And it's going to include recommendations back for an expansion and what we need in terms of what types of facilities, location types, specialization, where they should be placed in the state, obstacles and rules, strategies to maximize federal matching dollars, and to improve the efficient transition from inpatient to community services. So, unfortunately, I wish we had this data right now today while we're making this decision. But by next January, I think statewide we'll have a better sense of that issue that was raised by Ms. Semper about, you know, can we avoid a lot of hospitalization, just like we're doing in our healthcare reform initiative, where we're trying to get front end services to avoid unnecessary rehospitalization and expensive hospital care. I think that has some promise. And so my question that I was originally going to ask Ms. Semper was, now that you've gone to this reduced capacity, do you have a sense of how many people, your children and adolescents, you're redirecting to other facilities during this time? Have you seen a trend in that? Has it been going up as you've had that unit closed?
I'm not certain of that. I know that the unit has been up and down in census. I don't know how many we are diverting.
Thank you. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I'm trying to sort this all out, as I think a lot of other members are. And I'm looking at, this might have been from Fairview. Is this the piece from Fairview that said response to Prairie St.
Department?
Department. This is the Department of Health. Okay, well, this is what I'm trying to determine. I'm wondering if, I don't see Mr. Lights, but I'm wondering if the Department of Health could come and give a little bit more detail. I believe that this was submitted before the change to adolescent beds, and I'm looking at some of the concerns stated. I'd likely have a negative effect on existing hospitals and that type of thing, and I'm just wondering if I could get their perspective on this proposal.
Dr. Golden here in the Department of Health.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jim Golden. I'm the director of the Division of Health Policy. Unfortunately, neither Assistant Commissioner Leitz nor Julie Sonier could be here. I'm not sure if you could just repeat the question. That would be helpful for me.
Thank
you. I'm just trying to. I didn't read the public interest review, and actually was involved with the moratorium exception with the Maple Grove Hospital, since that's my area, and so I'm pretty familiar with the whole process. But I didn't get a chance to read the public interest review, but it looks like there's some criticisms of it, and I'm wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, and any of those criticisms have changed since the proposal has changed and since the amendment was adopted today.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I can. As you're probably familiar from the Maple Grove situation, the department, when there is to be an exception to the moratorium, is asked to do a public interest review. That public interest review really focuses on five specific issues: whether or not the new hospital or the beds are needed to provide timely access to care or improve services, what the financial impact of the new hospital or beds would be on existing acute care hospitals and beds, how the new hospital might affect the ability of existing hospitals to maintain their staff, the extent to which the new hospital will provide services to non-paying or low-income individuals, and then the views of the affected parties. So what we were originally looking at was the 144-bed proposal. There is a public interest review. I don't know if that's been, if you have that available. Certainly some of the members on the policy committee would have that. What we did find with the 144-bed proposal is that there would be likely a financial impact on other hospitals as well as the state, because of some of the patient shifting that would occur, the complexity of the patients that would be going to the existing hospitals would likely become more complex, and their average cost for treatment would increase, while their payments would not. So it was a negative impact on them. Likewise, there was going to be a cost to the state for some of the issues that Representative Flales raised with regard to Medicaid and the federal participation. One of the other points that we took a look at, well, we looked at all of them, and there were a number of issues. Certainly with regard to workforce, one of the things that's true in many of the counties in Minnesota, I think it's 70 out of 87 counties in Minnesota, are experiencing a workforce shortage with regard to psychiatric providers. And specifically, the metro area is not included in that shortage area. However, in working with many of the people who are currently recruiting psychiatrists, we found that the average time to get a psychiatrist that would do inpatient care was about 18 to 24 months to recruit someone. So it was a significant issue. And taking a look at some of the issues with the existing hospital, the number of beds were actually quite large when you compared them to the existing number of mental health and psychiatric and chemical dependency beds in the metro area. And we found that it represented about an increase of 15%. And we thought this was going to likely be a difficult issue for recruitment and retainment, certainly for existing hospitals, perhaps for Prairie St. John, although they had some other claims with regard to their ability to recruit. So those are kind of the highlights, I think, for some of the issues that have been discussed today. Certainly could give you more information on that. I think perhaps what you were asking about initially then was actually this document. We had been given some materials in anticipation of changing this to a 66-bed. I think that might have also been an amendment that was offered in the Senate, so we had seen this as a proposal before. And Prairie St. John had prepared some response to our original proposal. And I think what we wanted to do with this was just address some criticisms that had been raised with regard to that proposal that we didn't look at some adequate data sources, that we had done things differently with this review versus how we had done the Maple Grove review. And I think kind of what we wanted to emphasize was a few points. First, we weren't asked to do a public interest review on the 66 beds. So we have not done one on that. So we don't have a formal analysis to that. But there were a couple of issues. One of the reasons for our analysis is that we don't have a financial interest in this or another stake in this. Ours is to simply look at the five criteria and try to balance the various views. And while we did find it not in the public interest with the 144, there are still a few issues with the 66 that we wanted to be clear about. And it is our understanding that this is a reasonably large number of beds compared to the documented need that we were able to document. And we did find that there were some workforce issues that were out there. And with regard to the number of beds, I'm not sure if when there's not beds available, if it means that there aren't beds available or there aren't staff in order to staff the beds. I think that there are some questions with regard to those issues. And so that's what this was really just to address some of the criticisms of our original report. It's not intended to be a public interest review of the 66 bed proposal.
Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Golden, thank you very much. I just was trying to get an update because I hadn't read the original public interest review and was just very curious about if it had been changed since then. So I appreciate your feedback.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having sat through a number of these hearings and public hearings on this issue, I'd like to make a couple points in response to the conversation we've had so far. First of all, the initial public review document and part of the argument they had that it was in the public interest was about the information that in the seven-county metro, currently the supply of beds is greater than the demand for beds for the metro itself. And yet, despite that, we have 10% of our adults and 10% of our children out of orphans going out state into other states to get their services they need. The reason is that there's a huge inadequacy in out state for these services, so those folks come in to the metro beds. Now, the conclusion of the department, which I disagree with as in terms of labor economics and labor markets, is that therefore they concluded we should be putting more of these beds out state. The reality is, though, with the hiring of and recruiting psychiatrists and their career spouses, I don't believe that we are ever going to have a situation, while we should strive to do that, where we are going to get enough psychiatrists living out state in smaller communities to provide this need. We will continue to have a flow inflow into the metro area for services for some individuals for psychiatric services. Moreover, it's my view that 10% of our children and adolescents going to out-state locations or even to another state for services is just unacceptable. While it might be reasonable for managing beds around the state with adults to have adults be moved around so we don't have excess capacity, to have children be shipped hours and hours away from their families and maintain that in a viable way just seems completely untenable to me, and that the number should be zero for children and adolescents. So we need to have capacity where there is the demand for it, and we have 10% currently being shipped elsewhere around the state, according to the department themselves and their report, and that's unacceptable. A second issue in terms of the issue of mid-level services. In the East Metro in Washington County, we currently have two providers of those mid-level services. Human Services Incorporated, and I can be corrected by other people here there in the audience, Human Services Incorporated and also Children's Hospital. Those are the two groups involved in providing some of the in-school mental health services to children in the system, the psychological and psychiatric services to children in outpatient settings in our district. I've had discussions at length with the head of HSI about their current relationship they have with Prairie St. John. Currently, they have a relationship in which HSI does the longer-term, less acute outpatient care, and Prairie St. John does the more acute, shorter-term outpatient care. They have been satisfied with that relationship. It has worked well. They're very familiar with the approach that Prairie St. John's takes, and there's an appropriate niche for that type of more acute care, including hospitalization acute care. Currently, those children in the East Metro have to go to the to Minneapolis or to the beds that exist at Children's. In terms of overall where Children's beds are in the metro, they're heavily tilted to the West Metro. So if anything, and this came from the words of the head of HSI himself, if anything where we need new Children's beds, it certainly is in the East Metro. That's where they're needed because all we have is a Summit Children's. So that is the East Metro where we're lacking in additional Children's beds. In addition, there have been meetings in last week with Children's itself in terms of, you know, where this all fits in. Prairie St. John's has worked to talk about some of the overall problems in the system. One of the problems with both adults and child and adolescents is that when people go into the acute facilities, they no longer have the relationship with their previous psychiatrist. Meds change, everything changed, they have new psychiatrists working with them, and then they're released again to HSI or to whomever, and they have to go back to that system with those psychiatrists, again, meds change, and Prairie St. John's and HSI and Children's are aware that whether it's the adult system or the children and adolescent, this whole system is a mess in that regard, and they have been having discussions in the last few months about how to fix that, and Prairie St. John has been very willing to work and discuss with them about a more cooperative agreement so that their previous psychiatrists could interact with the ones in the acute facilities more effectively and both an exit and entry and avoiding the problems we have currently in the system. So they have been very willing partners to have discussions and work with the existing providers, HSI and Children's, on making mental health services for children and adolescents in general better in the entire East Metro. In terms of the issue of the psychiatrists and providers, I think it is true that part of the problem throughout the system in the metro has been retention and recruitment of psychiatrists. One of the things that this amendment does, making it a children's adolescent only facility, is they will not be competing for any of those adult psychiatrists at existing hospitals in the region. Moreover, with the size of the facility they're talking about, they expect to be able to staff that psychiatric hospital with the staff they already have. And so they will not be competing with any child psychiatrists at the existing facilities in any near-term sense. In terms of the number of beds, the 66, it's my understanding there's a kind of rational argument behind the argument. There's a reason for the number, but essentially they have to provide for three different kinds of youth and adolescent. One is children, the younger children, and then within the adolescent category, they need most adolescent with just mental health issues and then adolescents with mental and chemical dependency issues. So they need three different units at this facility. These three groups have to be separated. And that there's kind of a minimum kind of staffing, physical arrangement, whatever, that in the 22 so range, a little less with the normal average capacities, that functions effectively for units like this. And that's why it's the 66. It's because they have to have, you know, three units of 22 and then calculate in the average capacity within those, et cetera, as they move forward. So that's the logic behind the 66 beds. In terms of some of the other issues raised, again, with the adult issue, initially there were concerns about whether various kinds of public assistance would be taken, and then there was a secondary concern eventually about whether that cost the state. That has gone away. My understanding, and Representative Sales can speak to this further, that, you know, anyone is going to be accepted, arriving, any, you know, youth, child, adolescent can go to Prairie St. John's, and various types of public money will be accepted there. So I just wanted to hit some of those points in terms of the issues that have been raised. I think we continue to have a larger staffing issue in the state and the nation in this area. We have some mixed distorted incentives, evidently, in the medical professional market that has been undersupplying them, and it's a larger issue that we're addressing with this proposal. But I think with all of these points, I have come to the conclusion, not just because it's in my area, but that statewide and in the metro, we cannot accept 10% of our kids being shipped elsewhere, and that the initial problems that were raised with regards to this proposal, both the staffing competition, the accepting public monies, and the integrating themselves effectively with an existing mid-level and preventive services, are no longer issues regarding this proposal.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Doyle.
Thank you, sir. I would just like for one moment to provide you with a list of those organizations that are very supportive of this particular proposal. First of all, I need to tell you that the residents of Woodbury themselves are wanting this hospital to be built. They know that we have a need for beds for our kids and for our children. But these are some of the organizations that have endorsed this proposal. The Minnesota Medical Association, which believes we need an additional 600 psych beds over the next 3 years. The Minnesota Psychiatric Society. The Minnesota Chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians. The EMS Regulatory Board. HCMC. Regents Hospital. The Minnesota Sheriff's Association, and many other hospitals and healthcare professionals and Mayo Clinic. Okay, all of these organizations support having more beds available. We are in a stage in our population and in mental health, or the need for services, that we need to look at this proposal and hopefully make it a reality so that we can do what we need to do to help those most vulnerable in our metro area.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question maybe for Representative Swales or for staff. In the future, if we agreed to do this and Prairie St. John's continues and builds and decided that they wanted to change their mission and open their doors for adults, would that have to come back to the legislature for approval?
Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I will have Mr. John Ryan from Prairie St. John answer that question.
Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. It is my understanding that it would, because you're only licensed provisional on what you're given, what you're granted in statute. And so since this the amendment that I'm looking at says exclusively for patients who are under 21 years of age, would mean that if we wanted to remove that from the law, we'd have to come back to the legislature.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, is that the perspective of the Department of Health as well?
Mr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm not fully prepared to answer that question. Based on this exception, one might say yes, but I would say that there are a number of other exceptions, and one would have to take a look to see if any of the other exceptions could then be applied as well. So you get beds under one exception, but you have the ability to move them, for example, under another exception. Certainly can get that answer from the regulatory part of the agency to see what their view on that would be.
Thank you, Mr. Golden.
Next, we have Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm still trying to figure out how this works and where the real need is. And I see in the Department of Health information they gave us that there were 420 children and adolescents living in the Twin Cities who had to travel outside the Twin Cities for hospital-based psych services in 2006. And we don't have the 2007 numbers here, but that would be, if you averaged it out, and it never happens that way, but if you averaged it out, it would be a little more than one a day that are being sent outside the region. But let's say it's five times that, you know, are sent, you know, because you have peaks and valleys, so then that would be five beds a day. And Fairview's told us, that's the first number I've actually heard, because that's why I wanted that study, was that there are, they estimate 42 beds a month are people who are just waiting for discharge. And so, and if Fairview is, I don't know what percent they are of their mental health capacity in the Twin Cities. I don't know if they're 10% or they're half or whatever, but it feels like we can fairly, I just don't understand the business model that would support 66 new beds if it really is only 420 a year are being diverted. And even if it was, instead of one a day, bed a day, you needed 10 beds a day, I don't know how the business model is supportable with 66 beds. And the reason we have a moratorium and you need an exception is because we've learned in other areas that if you overbuild, it's very expensive to the entire system, because those costs get absorbed one way or another. And I'm wondering if Mr. Ryan might give us a better understanding of
where the how your business plan is going to work and where you think there is actually 66 beds a day of need, because I just don't see it in the numbers that we've heard so far. Where are they coming from? Why are they not getting any services and not being identified, and if we need a bigger outreach? I mean, what's the business model that will fill that large a number of beds?
Mr. Ryan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler. I think that it comes from a fundamental need to reduce the capacity. We don't want to have 66 beds filled to 100% capacity every day of the year. That means that during seasonal fluctuations, we have no excess capacity to absorb it. Much like when the 35W bridge collapsed, we were lucky that we run at 65 to 70% hospitalization capacity, because the excess capacity was needed to absorb that traumatic event. In mental health, we observe in the spring and the fall predictable increased demand for the entire spectrum of behavioral health services. And so to appropriately and adequately address the needs of a community, you need to run at about 70 to 75% average daily census. Right now in the Twin Cities, we run anywhere between 90 and 100% average daily census throughout the course of a year. So being able to decompress that, being able to right-size the bed capacity in the Twin Cities will mean that less ambulances will be going up to Duluth, going up to our Fargo location, going to Madison, going down to Rochester, and we believe that if we serve the patients in their own community with integrated access to supportive services once they are discharged, that in turn will save the state money by not having readmissions, by not costing money for ambulance rides, for police rides, for adults. And so the business model really is that in our Fargo facility, we average between 65 and 70% average daily census throughout the course of a year, because we have that. I mean, sometimes we're at 30% average daily, or, you know, daily census for a day, and sometimes we're at 100% and we have to divert people. But we only have to divert people once every 100 days, whereas in the Twin Cities, we have to divert people once every 10 days. And that's not just from a hospital to a different hospital. That's from the Twin Cities to someplace else.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ryan, but I'm still not, even if your goal is to work at 60 to 75% capacity, that would be 45 beds filled every single day, 365 days a year. And you still haven't told me where those 45 people are going to come from if only one in every 10 days do we divert someone. There's only 420 people a year diverted outside of the Twin Cities. I just still don't get who is going to be in those 45 beds, because on a daily basis, I don't quite yet get, unless you're going to take them from other facilities.
Well, hopefully we would. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler. Hopefully we would decompress other facilities to an extent. Hopefully they would no longer run at 100% or 95% average daily census, and that they would, if we took East Metro patients, took that demand pressure off of other facilities, if they could run at 75% and we could run at 75%, then that would be advantageous. I also want to point out that for every patient that we admit, we also keep them for about 10 days. So in talking about how many admissions there are and how many admissions there are going out of state, if we've got 1 in 10 admissions going out of state, so we would be more than at 100% capacity if we were talking about adults here. Now, since we're talking about children, we believe that we've targeted this facility to decompress every psychiatric inpatient provider in the Twin Cities to an acceptable level of somewhere between 75% to 80% average daily census. And so that we would, I mean, we would essentially serve patients that are sometimes served in other Twin Cities hospitals, sometimes served in outstate or out-of-state hospitals, and sometimes serve patients that are denied admission because they, you know, because there are no beds available.
Okay, Representation, do you have a question on this particular point?
Yeah, just to kind of reconcile one thing. My understanding is your application, we're expecting 90% capacity. And how does that square with now you're saying 65%, 70% capacity?
Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen. Our initial application predicted that we would run at 90% capacity with the 144 beds because we are of the same belief as the Minnesota Medical Association that 600 beds are needed in the state. And so we believe that we would be running at over our ideal capacity, over the ideal capacity for the state, because there's a severe shortage of beds. And without anybody else adding beds, and with us only adding those 144 beds, we would be running at 90% plus capacity. That doesn't mean that that's where we want to be. We want to be at 75, 70, and that's where we run our Fargo facility.
Representative,
and I guess this is, I think, where a lot of people are getting confused, is because you come in here and say we have a severe shortage of beds, we need to be running at 90% of capacity, but now you're telling us what we really want to be at 65% of capacity, and all that has to do with how many beds we actually really need. I think it really goes to Representative Loeffler's point that the numbers just don't seem to be adding up here. But, and that's not a question, that's more of a comment. So we can go on.
Representative Hodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to get this into one question. I come from an area where the department's public need review showed that central Minnesota had the greatest efficiency and the greatest need for capacity. And we hear stats that, you know, 10% of the people in the metro need to leave all of the state or all of the area. It's much greater in central Minnesota. Also, you know, that West Metro has capacity and East Metro has the greatest need. I still consider that the metro. When you go to central Minnesota and my residents, and my children and those with mental health conditions are leaving the entire region, that's a big concern. Can I get assurances in one way or another that this proposal will not limit the ability for central Minnesota to address those deficiencies that were indicated in the department's public need review?
Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know. We're definitely not going to try to take psychiatrists away from central Minnesota. We're not going to try and take services away from central Minnesota. But to the extent that children are better served closer to home, and to the extent that this then goes out of the public awareness, I think that there is a concern, a genuine concern on the part of stakeholders, and something that I heard come from you too, that we need to do more than just this, and we're afraid that this is going to be put up as by some as the end all be all, the absolute solution to the problem. What I can guarantee you is that if we're allowed to build, you will have one more voice in the choir calling for increased access to the entire spectrum of behavioral health services, and that's for rural Minnesota, for outstate Minnesota, for the Twin Cities. We believe that we are at a crisis level in terms of the entire spectrum of mental health care.
Next we have Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This kind of piggybacks on Representative Haas, and it goes back to Brainerd, and we're all talking about providers, and we had providers in Brainerd, and we had a successful adolescent and children program, and so now that program is gone, and that's where all my kids go. And so how can you, I know you, there was a deficit, but we know how, what the, that the Central Minnesota and mental health is huge. I mean, when I was teaching, I had three students kill themselves. I think there's been four or five attempts and some more lately. And can you talk to me a little bit about the fact that there aren't enough providers, but we had providers, we had a great program, and now those kids are going to Canada and North Dakota, and can you help me with that? And I guess I'm asking the department.
Mr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otremba, I can help you in that I can say that it is, in fact, that we did find that of the areas that had probably the largest deficiency, it was the central area of the state. They had among the lowest ratios of the number of days available to the patients in that area that needed days. You saw some other low ones in some of the other areas, such as the Northwest, but part of the rationale for that was they were actually traveling out of state. So I would say that you are correct, Representative Hosh is correct in that that is where some of the greatest needs and some of the people traveled the most in order to receive care. I'm not sure if that addressed your question, but...
Well, Mr. Chair...
Representative Tremba.
There was a need, and we know there was a need, and then some of that was actually there already was taken away, and that's kind of the beef I have.
Okay, Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Seems like kind of a hard problem to solve, and I'm supporting today's bill, just so you know. As I listen to the discussion, however, it seems like the problem is staff. And we did some budget balancing a few years ago, and we turned people out of nursing homes to put them into community resources that weren't there to save money. I don't know what bench they're going to sit on until they came. And it's kind of the same in this deal here. We have psychiatrists, and there's not enough of them around, and with Representative Thiessen's work and Powell's work that's about getting more flexibility and licensure, I think that we really have a problem with that. And I don't see any improvement in the psychiatrist market coming along. And I think that we're being held hostage by that. And I think at some point we have to decide who can do those same things with a lesser license and still do it fine. And maybe there needs to be. In the same way that we did the mid-level dental practitioner, which was very controversial. I don't know where that is these days. But at some point you have to show people's teeth, and you have to keep... you know, people served with their needs, and I'm frustrated by that. You know, we created a mid-level counselor licensure, the licensed professional clinical counselor, and we can't find the money to pay them an MA. And the community-based mental health services that the counties pay for, which are the first thing to go when they're short of money, are some of the ways to keep people out of the hospital, which is just to give people the big picture of all this. And I think in the meantime, we're stuck with solutions like this. We need to have capacity in another for-profit group that will somehow conjure up enough staff to do the work with their desire to stay in business. And I hope as Representative Loffler, if your task force takes off and works, that they can look at the comprehensive picture and come back with some licensure suggestions. I think part of it is we need more bodies to do the work. And I think as all demographic stuff goes forward, we're going to be short of everything, be it dentists and primary care clinicians and psych people. I appreciate the work on the part of the advocates just to bring forward this resolution to this problem at this time, and I hope we can move forward with it.
Okay, next we have, there's three people on Liebling, Bunn, and Rude, Representative Liebling. Oh, she's gone. So, Representative Bunn.
Hi. The
couple comments. First, in terms of what Ripson Hosh raised, and he's disappeared under Tremba, mentioned earlier that currently 10% of the adolescent children in the metro are going outstate or to another state. That means they are taking up space in outstate beds. And therefore, when the outstate need arises, it's no longer available for them because metro residents are in those beds. Because of this flow back and forth between the two, to the extent that we are at peak capacity and straining capacity in the metro and have these, you know, beds available on the weekends, et cetera, and during peak times, it means they're going outstate, filling up those beds, and they're not available to outstate residents. So in my view, in terms of the outstate need, having additional metro beds mean we won't be sending that 10% of the metro adolescents and children outstate, and therefore it will free up those outstate beds for those in the outstate area. So it should relieve some of the strain on the outside bed capacity, so it's a win for you on that. So back to reinforce the main points here. We have this 10% of our metro area youth and adolescent being sent outstate, additionally pressuring the outstate bed capacity. Their needs are not being met near their families. They're having to be separate from their families, or their families having to relocate and at expense of their jobs and family life and support for this individual. And we have that demonstrated need that goes forward. We've monitored that need even in the most recent time period, and it continues to be a major problem in the metro area. In addition, not only are we not competing with psychiatrists for these other facilities in order to staff this facility, one thing we haven't gotten into today that was brought up at other hearings is it appears that this type of facility, freestanding psychiatric facility, is more attractive as a work environment for people in the psychiatric field. So if anything, the evidence from other states suggests that they will have better ability at some point to recruit from out of state and get people here to work in Minnesota and relieve some of our capacity problems with providers and staffing that way if at some point in time they need to expand their child psychiatric staff. So I think we have a demonstrated need in terms of this 10%. We're not competing for staffing with other facilities in the area. We are not having any financial impact on the state from this facility. We will need to continue to work in the East Metro and throughout the Metro and state on developing these positive relationships for different components of the system, the preventive, the mid-level, and the acute care. I think Prairie St. John, at least to those of us who work in the East Metro, have demonstrated over the last many months that they are fully engaged in that conversation, that they're receptive to working to those parties, as I mentioned, HSI, Human Services Incorporated, and Children's, who work in the child adolescent area in our state and in our region. So I think that there's a tremendous argument here for moving forward with this. We have heard for years and years now about the difficulty of providing enough beds in the system. It's absolutely the case, whether it's the East Metro Collaborative or the other organizations that have been working the math in the last many years, that we need to not have people in beds that shouldn't be there, and we need the preventive and the post-care efforts. Our legislation last year addressed that. Representative Loffer's initiative that she just spoke about addresses that, and we will need to continue to address that. In the meantime, those who need care and show up and sit in emergency rooms under great stress to them and their families and possibly risk to people around them, or have to travel 4 hours or further to receive the care that they need, is just untenable. We need to continue to work on these other issues, provide the funding and mid and preventive services that are needed and post services, but we also have an acute need that hasn't gone away for years and years and years at this point. I think it would be negligent not to move forward at this time to address this critical need while then continuing to work on the other issues that we all are aware of and continue to raise at these hearings.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Swales, I just want to commend you that you've really worked hard on this bill, and I really respect the work that you've done, and there are a number of good people working with you. I did read the original report by the department, and we've talked a little bit, and I'll say I still do have some reservations and concerns about the proposal as it stands. I Representative Liebling had to leave the room, and she had asked a question for her, and my question that I was originally going to ask has been asked already and answered. And that was the list of supporters that you had mentioned early on. She was wondering if that were they supporting this particular proposal, or are they just in support of more psychiatric beds in general? And also, just to clarify that, it is my understanding that Regents Hospital does not support this proposal. but I don't know if somebody here would like to speak to that. But thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rude, they are in support of the need for capacity for more beds. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Lothar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One issue that in the earlier hearing and this hearing we haven't really wrestled with, but I think we need to give some thought to, in addition to, you know, is there a need for beds and isn't there, and could we meet those beds by more pre- and post-services rather than building buildings, but the whole issue of a for-profit hospital, and it's my understanding that we only have one for-profit hospital in Minnesota currently, which is actually a for-profit nursing home that when they started taking ventilator-dependent high-need people, found they could get a higher reimbursement if they were actually licensed as a hospital. So we really haven't worked with this kind of a model before. And I don't remember, I mean, I don't know what's all in our current laws and obligations of for the nonprofits. I mean, last year we spent a fair amount of time defining community benefits and reporting it and that sort of thing. But I do know there was a negotiated settlement, and I don't know if it got into law, where our nonprofit hospitals all agreed that they would not charge more to the uninsured than the lowest, you know, the highest discount rates, or, you know, the lowest price that they offer anyone in the market. And I'm wondering if Mr. Ryan could tell us whether or not it's intended that they would go into agreement with that, what their pricing policies are, and what you feel you would be exempted from as a for-profit hospital that our nonprofits aren't, because I'm not familiar with what the laws are on what they have to do. But if you could help us understand the distinction and whether or not you would enter into the same pricing agreements that we were able to get out of the other members of the hospital system.
Mr. Ryan. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler. It's my understanding that the reason that that nonprofit hospitals are expected to perform charity care, are expected to provide that community benefit, is because they are not taxable. And in exchange for not being taxed, they are expected to provide a minimum level of service to the community. That being said, Prairie St. John's as a taxable entity is perfectly comfortable committing itself to the same set of guidelines in terms of pricing. In fact, I believe that our current pricing guidelines in Fargo are in substantial compliance with the negotiated settlements. And we'd be happy to modify them in any small way in order to bring them fully in line. In terms of what the duties of a nonprofit hospital versus a for-profit hospital are, I don't really know much more than what I've already said. You know, I think that our duties as a for-profit hospital, as a Catholic-affiliated hospital, are different than maybe just a standard for-profit hospital. We do quite a bit of charity care, quite a bit of community benefit. We have very lax debt collection policies already, which is basically, if we can get somebody to return a phone call to us and tell us that they don't want to pay the bill, they can't. That their emotional state isn't such that they could pay the bills, that we then write that off as bad debt. So, you know, to the extent that you're concerned about a, you know, somebody that's owned by venture capitalists or Wall Street trying to extract every last dollar out of every last patient, that's not our intent. It's not the way that we've operated in Fargo, and it's not the way that we will operate in the Twin Cities.
Representative
Stevens. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like Representative Ava, I'm going to be supporting the bill today. I guess my question is to point Representative Bunn raised, and I think this is not an issue whether there's capacity or not, it's whether 66 seems like still too many beds. to me, Representative Bunn made the point that 22 is kind of the minimum you can do to make this work per unit. And I'm wondering what, and she said there's some rationale to that, but didn't explain what the rationale was. I'm wondering if 56 or 22 per unit is actually the limit, or whether there is room to kind of accommodate some of the concerns I think raised here, which is that this creates too much capacity. I am concerned that we're going down the line of 50, you know, that our goal should be 65% capacity or 70% capacity, but if you could talk a little bit more about that, that may be helpful as we move forward.
Mr. Ryan. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Beeson. It's 22 beds per unit. It really is about the bare minimum in terms of staffing efficiencies. And in terms of staffing efficiently for an entire hospital, 66 beds is really about, it's scraping the bottom to what would, you know, if we went down to 60 beds, which I don't know that 60 sounds any better than 66 to you, but if we went down to 60, we would be very much in jeopardy of not being financially viable. So there is that issue. And if I could just clear up one point that you made earlier, in terms of our old proposal versus our new and the 90% versus the 65 or 70%, our old proposal was for adult beds. And we still believe that we need to add about 200 adult beds in the Twin Cities, which our proposal doesn't address at all at this point. And so to the extent that we added 144 beds, 42 of which were child and adolescent, we realized that we would still be at peak capacity most of the time. And that's why we had the 90% projected occupancy rate. Our 60 to 70% projected occupancy rate for this facility is based on the fact that we believe that it is the adequate, it is addressed to be adequate so that we can meet the needs of the Twin Cities patients, like I said, you know, up to 1 out of 20, 1 out of 100 days where we would actually have to ship a patient someplace else. But for the vast majority of time, we'd be able to meet their needs within their community. Thank you. That's helpful.
Is there any other questions? Just a comment. In Duluth, in northeastern Minnesota, we have two facilities that can take kids, and it's not a rare occurrence in Duluth to have a Duluth kid that needs to be admitted to the hospital, and he can't get in because the hospital has Twin Cities kids sitting in there because they couldn't get into Twin Cities. So the impact of the Twin Cities actually has an impact in northeastern Minnesota. With that, I don't see no other discussion. All those in favor of Representative Bunn, would you make the motion?
Chair Peason, Chair Huntley, thank you very much. I move that we pass to the Finance Committee House File 35339 as amended.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
The ayes have it, and House File 3539 is sent to the Finance Committee.
Thank you.
And with that, the meeting is adjourned.